Hey, before we get started on today's show, I want to tell you this is part one of a multiverse part of Nets free agent target previews. Part one is going to deal with sort of like the larger question with Spencer Dinwiddie and his sign and trade deal, and then some free agent targets. Part two, which will come out on Monday, will deal much more with specific free agent targets that the Nets can have. And then we'll just going to keep the ball rolling. A lot of the topics that we hit were from our emails that we got, netspod@gmail.com, if you want to join the conversation. So coming up right now is part one of a multi-part Brooklyn Nets free agency preview discussion. Welcome back to the Glue Guys. This is Mike here. Say hello,
hello.
Brian.
Flat. Listen Jeez. How flat.
Whoa. Off-season bride.
Caught a crab. Wow.
Ouch. Check us out on Twitter at BKGlueGuysNetsDaily.com. The Athletic. Get yourself behind the paywall. It's a great time to do so. Fantasy football season is upon us. TheAthletic.com/GlueGuys. The Athletic has some of the best fantasy football writers in the world, Brian.
Michael.
The Nets are back.
We're back. And you know who else is back is the Garcia brothers and their truck, which you'll be hearing for the first bit of this as they tow away a dumpster, Mike, is what we got going on here. It's the third dumpster of the week. Really clearing out. Big Reno next door.
People just don't want us to do this pod, this earth-shattering, earth-shaking pod
right.
that we're about to do.
That's right. For the world. Trying to keep us down, Mike. Talk to me. What's going on? What's the newest latest?
We've got a lot to discuss. So obviously, congratulations to the Phoenix Suns for making it to the NBA Finals. Can I just ask, have you been watching?
A little. I will confess to having, like, I wasn't ready for the butthurt to persist this long, but watching the Bucks has been really lame. And then also when Kawhi has had his issues, I'm just like, this is just a weird, now it's gotten weird, all right? And I'm just like, I'm happy for the Phoenix Suns. You know, that's a cool team. And I guess if it's an Atlanta Hawks Phoenix Suns finals, that'll be so weird and fun that I'll be fine with that. But this, like, the conference finals has been just like meh. I don't know. I'm not into it.
Yeah, I haven't. I honestly have watched like a game, like compiling all the minutes that I've watched of both series. It's been a game, and I'm not like proud to admit it, but. No. Once the Nets got knocked out, it just kind
of... It's hard to admit that like I'm pretty not objective, ultimately. Like, I really just want to watch my team. That's a big thing.
And also, I think it is that, as you kind of alluded to, it's not like an exciting... No matter what, it's not like we're seeing LeBron charge forward for what would be his fifth championship or, you know, list any... Like, Steph Curry going on a streak of his... like. What we're seeing is a Kawhi-less Clippers get knocked out by a Suns team, which I'm happy for Chris Paul. Like, I think, like, of that generation of player, Chris Paul is the greatest without sort of the postseason success, right?
Yeah,
he's the best of that era. So now he's going to go to the finals, and it'll be interesting to see who plays. But what we are talking about today, Brian.
Okay.
Is your Brooklyn Nets, because there's a lot of decisions that need to be made. And we put it out to Glue Nation. And we ask Glue Nation, what do you want us to talk about in this first episode of our off-season preview, in a way?
Yeah.
Free agent targets. People want the buzz. Who's coming on this team? Who's hopping in? Who's getting the invite to the championship train for next season? And we got a lot of email at netspod@gmail.com. That's how you get in on the conversation. And Brian, You captain this email train. Where should we go first? What are we talking about?
Well, per our pre-production consortium.
I was trying to lead into it as if like you were just going to suddenly pull out these emails magically.
I know. I always like to break the wall.
Whether
it's the Garcia brothers or a conversation about the emails, I like to break the wall. First up is, I'm also sensitive to, this is a question I'll put to you, and maybe just Glue Nation, you can chime in. When I'm reading emails, do we want last names? Is that am I doxing, you know?
Ooh, I understand what you're
saying. I've always done it just implicitly in the past. Nobody said anything.
Can I be honest? The list of emailers that we have all have fantastic last names.
That's part of it, too.
Because, yeah, are you starting off with Mark? MPL?
MPL.
MPL's got a fantastic... We've got a Tony in here, Matthew Abramovitz. I just doxed him, but
yeah, we've doxed him,
old friend of the show.
Times,
yeah, I say we go last names. If people don't want us to put your last names out there,
this could be the last time we do.
Just
last
send
names.
Us your social security number, and we will say that. Instead. Yeah.
So MPL, aka Mark Pierre Louis, is in the Pierre Louis in an American parlance. It says, "Hi guys. Ness should definitely pick up a PJ Tucker or sign and trade Spence for Jonathan Isaac and Joe Harris for Miles Turner." So this is how we're launching into the big Spencer Dinwiddie conversation, like with sign and trade talk. This is one of a few versions of this that we'll see in our emails. People want to sign and trade Spencer, and let's talk about it.
I would love it if the way MPL put it out there, if that's how Joe Tsai just texted Sean Marks and was like, "Hey, Sean, Nets should get PJ Tucker and we should sign and trade Spence for Jonathan Isaac and we should trade Joe Harris for Miles Turner. K-bye. Like, it was just left at that. And Sean Marks is left to grapple with, what am I going to do here in this situation?
And also get Jalen Hance on the phone because
where is Jalen Hance at this point? So I've also, we're not going to do our draft preview yet. It's too early, but I've definitely Googled prospects' names and Joe Tsai to see if there's any connection to any of these prospects.
Of course you did.
There is. UCLA has another really good guard. I think it's Johnny Juzang. I don't know how to pronounce the last name exactly, but I love him. He's a mid-range dog, and he's like kind of like a big, he's like a Kyle Anderson type. And I imagine he knows Joe Tsai. So, because he went to UCLA and Joe Tsai has a connection there. So
there it is.
Anyways.
Heard it here first.
Can I do, before we do Spence, quick thing on PJ Tucker. Question to you.
Yeah.
Is what happened in the Bucks-Nets series with the way PJ Tucker was acting, does that make it more likely or less likely that he would join the Brooklyn Nets?
Acting meaning like towards like the players of the Nets, or how do you mean? What do you mean acting?
Like, shit talking KD the entire time, like mauling him constantly. PJ Tucker grew out his fingernails for that series and was just scratching KD's arms like one of your cats.
Yeah, reopening his shoulder scrape over and over again. I think that's part of PJ's brand. I feel like everybody just knows that. Like when you're on my team, you do that towards the Jason Tatums just as easily or whomever. On our behalf. And so, yeah, I would say just broadly speaking, I don't love PJ Tucker's game. And I think like he had a good series against us. I think he's had like a decent year or whatever. But if we're going to go raw dog special, junkyard dog special, sorry, I don't know why raw dog, not raw dog. Tough guy, the tough guy act. I don't know that PJ...
Walk your way out of that one.
Yeah, I don't know that PJ Tucker... Because here's my thinking, is that PJ Tucker as like a... Like basically covering combo guards and up to the stretch fours and like in a pinch fives. I think that we can do a lot more with younger, more speedier defensive specialists. We've got already, if we're going to talk about like, you know, Jeff Green and Blake Griffin down the line here, which, you know, these are guys who I think that we should be looking at re-signing. I know like there's a whole lot to unpack there, but in a depth chart where, you know, we're running lots of those two, how does PJ Tucker fit in? I don't know. So in thinking about all this for this offseason, I like to think, you know, I started from a high level, 10,000 miles. You know, what did we see that we actually want and need on this team? Just from like a, like what were we looking for? And for this, I go like, obviously like defensive minded centers, maybe having that has like a utility would be cool.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
And real perimeter.
Like a real center. A real center. Not just center. Like Blake yeah. Griffin, which who I love dearly, but.
I think Nick Claxton has the potential. He's, you know, he's not, it's different. It's just not, it's not a Robin Lopez who we'll get to, but it's Ooh. A different, yeah, we'll get to him. But, and then also Jeez. Perimeter defenders as well in a pinch. I don't know that, like, I feel like PJ Tucker hits in the hermaphroditic zone of not quite... You know, not quite hitting the centers, not quite hitting the water bug guards who would ostensibly give us trouble, although we didn't even get to play Trae Young, which whatever. But so, yeah, anyways, that's my brief take on PJ Tucker. Tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, I don't. One, I don't think PJ Tucker's on this team for like kind of the way that he did act.
Really? You think the acting is the problem?
Yeah. I think he was getting personal with Kevin Durant, and when that tends to happen, I don't think KD like loves that. Like, he does love to bark back, but I don't think he loves the person.
I thought they were like buddies. I mean, it's not to say
they were.
Like,
that's what I was
KD,
shocked.
I'm sure
by the way PJ Tucker was doing was acting.
I my sense of KD, and I, you know, again, I don't know KD. I want to make sure
friend of the show. friend of the show.
I don't want to Jackie McMullen myself here.
Jeez.
What?
I forgot about that yeah. that controversy.
Yeah. So I'm not going to pretend already. To know him, but he seems like the kind of guy where he could snip you out of his life real easy. That seems to be the case. So,
I think that's a healthy thing for Kevin.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a healthy thing for everybody. You know, if you've got a toxic friendship, you know, don't be afraid. It's the breakup nobody wants to talk about, Mike.
Can I be honest for a sec? Like, and we're totally derailing. We're going to get back on the Spencer sign and trade thing, and I apologize for derailing. There's so many... you know, basketball opinion people, analysts, writers, and like I understand it, like this is like part of the biz, but so many of them talk about how Kevin Durant will never be able to find happiness. Yeah. So many. And I'm like there's part of like you and I love sort of the mental gymnastics that we like to untangle people's mental state all the time. We did it with Darren Williams, and that was a very easy read. You know, that was judging a book by its cover. We didn't. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to dive deep into that one, that pool. You understood what Darren Williams was thinking by how grumpy he was all the time. But I do kind of think like we should maybe not just say Kevin Durant will never be happy. Like I think like that feels like a little too. It's too personal, too declarative. Yeah. Maybe I've even said it in the past, and you know, dig up the tapes. I'm sure you could find. But it's like I don't know. I'm sure he's. Probably pretty happy. It's just that he hasn't had a perfect basketball situation for him.
I listened to that episode of The Boardroom with him and Rich Kleiman, and like they spoke, and I believe them. They're like, "Hey, this is like the happiest you've ever been. Seems like you're sleeping good these days." You know, this whole Brooklyn Nets situation. It's like, yeah, the fans are like ultimately like in the grand scheme of things, it's the best of both worlds. It's a big market with like you know kind of chill fans, mostly pretty like laid back bros. Which is helpful if you're the kind of guy who can feed off the negative energy of, you know, the expectations that come from fans. Again, I don't know that that's the case, but he's been talking about just like, he's like, this summer I just want to go to a bunch of baseball games. Awesome. That feels like an amazing, amazing decision.
And he's gone to a Liberty game, he's gone to a Yankee game, a Mets game, and he's like kind of becoming a man about town. Kevin Durant. Town.
He's like, I want to have a chill summer. I want to crush some White Claws and watch and watch some high level baseball. That's it.
What do you think is Kevin Durant's canned beverage of choice? Do you think it is White Claw, or do you think he's like a Miller Lite guy, or is he a
canned beverage? Like just pure? Because like I was going to go noon. more of like the Sody Pop range for Kevin. He just seems like like a guy who loves sweets. That's how I. A lot of NBA players. That's their vice is like gummies and stuff.
A lot of podcasters. It's
is
also,
that you?
Wow, it's also, yeah, gummies are great.
If I'm going candy,
CBD gummies from EagleMoonHemp.com.
Oh wow, we're so good at that these days. You're really,
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Let's do Spencer sign and trade. Apologies to everyone who are waiting with bated ears for that one. So... MPL, Mark Pierre Lewis, Louis brought up Louis. Spencer for Jonathan Isaac. Just quickly, I'll say, I don't think there's any way that the Magic trade Jonathan Isaac. Like, they, I think they consider him the best player on their team. And while I have looked at the Magic as a potential Spencer sign and trade team, if you do look at the roster, they have Markelle Fultz, who they like to some degree. They have Cole Anthony, who I think they do like. And like, they should want Spencer Dinwiddie, but I also think they know that they're going to suck next year. And they might as well just be bad again and get another high draft pick and keep that thing rolling. So I don't think Jonathan Isaac for Spencer Dinwiddie isn't going to happen.
Well, you actually you raise an interesting point there, because like I hate to interrupt you. I really didn't mean to. Is that like Spencer Dinwiddie sign and trades are interesting, because there's like, you know, when you're doing this, there's the financial element, and if you're jettisoning significant amounts of caps, you're trading around big amounts of cap space, there's like a whole bunch of different motivating factors for doing that. And what's interesting about Spencer Dinwiddie is that he can be a good player on a bad team. Like, he doesn't actually maybe move the needle towards, like, because, you know, sometimes you're like, yeah, well, I don't want to like get this guy back because it like makes our team too good, and we're trying to like low key, you know, not be necessarily so good and save some money.
Right.
And I actually think that Spencer could function very well as the best player on a bad team.
Well, and I've actually thought about him in that way too, where it's like, if you're one of these teams drafting near the top of the draft, Detroit, Cleveland, you know, whoever's been, I mean, Toronto doesn't really count, but like, there's all this perception of like, you get a young guard, let him run your team, and you go, right? You let that guy make mistakes. If I'm building a team, I'd rather have a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie next to him, because one, Spencer can relieve some pressure. Spencer could play off the ball. Like, that's what I think is going to be really attractive about the Spencer Dinwiddie market, is that he fits on like any team. Mm-hmm. He fits on the bad teams where he can be sort of the first, second option, lead the team offensively, or kind of help a young guy go. Or he could be like kind of a missing piece for a lot of contenders, which is a little scary when we talk about sign and trade. Because I have a list of teams that I think make sense for a sign and trade.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about all the implications of that. But a lot of them are direct competitors for the Brooklyn Nets. Just quickly, Lakers, Clippers, because the two LA teams, Christian Winfield from Daily News reported that Spencer either wants the bag or he wants to go back home to LA. So Lakers, Clippers, and they could both teams could use him. Dallas has been linked to Spencer Dinwiddie all last offseason at various times. Philadelphia, Philly could absolutely use him. Yes, Brian.
Can I put one data point in there? I think he prioritizes the bag, like, maybe like 5x more than being in LA.
Being home in LA.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's the silliest thing. It's like, and we'll talk about the financials of it, but I mean, how much do you really love Los Angeles versus getting an extra $5 million to go play for the Memphis Grizzlies?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's who it would be, but, or the New York Knicks, which frankly could probably use Spencer Dinwiddie too.
Yeah.
Let's have this the conversation I do want to start with, though, with Dinwiddie, before we kind of get to the nitty-gritty. Why would the Nets do a sign-and-trade, right? So if you're a team making the sign-and-trade deal, it's because you don't want to lose a player for nothing, right? But a lot of the teams that Dinwiddie is probably are going to be interested in Spencer Dinwiddie are teams that don't have cap space, like the Clippers, like the Lakers. Dallas does have cap space, so that's what makes them interesting. Philadelphia doesn't have cap space to speak of. The Celtics could, but I don't really think he's going to go to Boston. So any deal you make in a sign and trade with a team that does not have cap space, they're sending salary back. So a lot of people have talked about Lakers and Kuzma. Kuzma's making $13 million a year. Clippers, they'd have to send like Marcus Morris back, who actually, like, I could get behind. But the problem is, if you're the Nets and you're bringing back salary in a sign and trade, it just continues to put you in a shitty financial situation. I would rather, and I would ask you, I'd rather just have Spencer Dinwiddie than have like Marcus Morris or Kyle Kuzma or some other like other mid-tier sort of like low-end starter, high-end bench guy. if I'm going to pay the Dinwiddie money, if I'm going to pay the money that it takes to bring back that salary, I'd rather just have Spencer Dinwiddie. So, like, that's also why I don't know if a sign and trade's gonna happen.
So, and that's where the binary for me kicks in, is like, do you let him walk or, you know, let that? And so it seems, I mean, yeah, anyways, but Sean Marks did specifically say, like, we want to help him get places. So, like, the sign and trade conversation is at least, like, there's been a tip of the fedora to it. but I don't know if that's just a token tip or a real tip of the fedora, Mike.
I think it's like, leave options open. I mean, I would like to see Spencer Dinwiddie remain a Brooklyn Net. I don't think it's possible because his salary plus luxury tax is going to be so expensive.
Yeah.
So the only other options are, like, just let him walk or do sign and trade.
Well, it'll be interesting. I mean, if they do re-sign him, which I agree with you, that's the less likely situation. I still think it's possible. I'm going to say that because it will depend. I haven't seen what Josiah's, like, financial, like has he ever really
net
gotten,
income has that.
yeah. Right. But I will say that, like, I think Spencer Dinwiddie, like, we could have definitely used a, you know, an initiator combo guard to pop in and man it. Like, we were running a whole lot of Mike James than I wanted to see towards the end of that season, and into the playoffs. Insert a Spencer Dinwiddie in there, and I feel like that that is a need and a place where we were like, oh, this is, like, we actually don't have depth here at this one spot, which Spencer's, like, uniquely kind of built for. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and so here's the real secret weapon X for the Nets. And basically no team except kind of the Warriors have ever done this. And it could be done, but it would be the most expensive team in basketball history if they did this. The secret weapon is using Dinwiddie's bird rights and signing him up to whatever, the four-year, $80 million contract, whatever the $20 million per year deal is. I think that's what he's going to get because I think he's one of the better guards out there, even with the injury.
Yeah, the injury is the only... Yeah, unknown.
Yeah. Re-signing Bruce Brown for whatever it takes, because he's a restricted free agent, whatever it takes. So his salary, let's say his salary is $8 million a year, just roughly. And then having those two guys on a roster that already has three max guys on it, and Joe Harris at the dollar figure he's at, and DeAndre Jordan at the dollar figure at, they would have so much in salary that they could make any trade and not have to move any of the big three. They could get, if you re-sign Spencer Dinwiddie and Bruce Brown, you could get Damian Lillard down the line. Easy. I mean, because if, let's say, it's $20 million plus the $8 million plus DeAndre Jordan's $10 million, you have Damian Lillard. And you could, for the first time in the history of the NBA, have four max salary slot guys, because you'd be willing to, if you're willing to pay that luxury tax, you could do it. Some teams can't ever do that because of how their contracts have worked out. The Nets, because of the situation they were in when they got Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and then having these young guys who are going to deserve more money, as they do, they have the potential to, like, if Josiah wanted to spend the money, they have the potential to basically make themselves the first four max salary team in the history of the NBA, and everyone would hate them. And I'm not saying they're not going to, I don't think they're going to get Damian Lillard, obviously, but they could, like, there's a clear path.
It's
wide open for them to do it.
It's 5D backgammon you're playing there, Mike. And I think you got to know a lot about Portland's thinking or any other, sort of toxifying superstar situation before committing yourself to a situation like that potentially. Because otherwise, because if you actually don't do that, then you're committed, like, long term, and then those start to get ugly year after year. Maybe potentially, maybe not. Maybe Bruce Brown has multiple levels to ascend to. Who knows? But I mean, you could jitter yourself in the foot pretty good that way. But unless you know something about what they're thinking in Portland about what they're willing to trade Damian Lillard for, you know, little on the sly move, Mike, you could pull it off, but probably not.
Well, let's do some quick little possible sign and trade deals, like living in the sense. So with the Lakers, you could get Kyle Kuzma, potentially. Kuzma's always out there to be had. Would you like yourself some Kyle Kuzma?
No.
Would that interest you anymore?
Not really. Not especially.
I think he's so hyped up. Yeah. I think he's, like, a nice role player. And this is going to be pretty blasphemous to say, but I think Alize Johnson is, like, 80% of Kyle Kuzma.
What? Alize Johnson?
And I'd rather just nurture Alize.
Whoa.
Than pay the Kyle Kuzma tax.
That's, I did not think of Kyle Kuzma as a player with adjacent skill sets to Alize Johnson. I got to think about that.
I think, like, they're pretty adjacent. I mean, I just think Kuzma is a way, like, traditionally he's a better shooter. He's a better score. He's better in everything.
I just feel like he's a different body
I love Alize Johnson.
altogether. Like, Alize Johnson feels like an undersized, like, scrappy center, and Kuzma feels like an oversized, like, combo guard.
So they are the same size.
Height-wise.
Literally the same size.
Yes, you're right. By that metric, yeah, you're right.
I don't have a Clippers one besides, like, I guess, like, Marcus Morris. I think that's the Morris twin that is on the Clippers. I love that, but I don't think it would happen. Here's one from I think this was Bobby Marks from ESPN had this for the Chicago Bulls. Okay. This is a three-way sign and trade deal, which is actually something that feels like could happen. The Bulls get Spencer Dinwiddie in a sign and trade. They give up Thaddeus Young to the Brooklyn Nets in a 2026 second round pick, which would come via Oklahoma City, and the Thunder would get DeAndre Jordan and the Nets first round pick this year. So the Thunder would have three first round picks this year to add to their stash of first round picks going forward. And the Nets dump DeAndre Jordan on the Thunder by trading a first round pick, and the Nets get Thaddeus Young and a second round pick in 2026.
Is this an email or is this you? You're making this up?
No, this, I saw this in, like, when I Googled Spencer Dinwiddie signing trades, this is the thing that popped up. It's from Bobby Marks,
okay,
of ESPN, former Nets executive.
I was looking for the email. Yeah.
Thaddeus Young, getting rid of DeAndre Jordan and getting Thaddeus Young, I kind of love that. That gets me excited, and Mr. Young could certainly fill a role on this team. He's not a small ball five, but he's like a crafty four, and he, obviously we have a relationship with him. I love the time that he spent in Brooklyn. And what I like about it is that Dinwiddie goes to the Bulls, and I'm not scared of the Chicago Bulls. Whereas if Spencer goes to, like, the Clippers, Lakers, Philly, I don't like that. That scares me. Would you be excited for a Thaddeus Young reunion, Brian? By your face, you're saying not really.
I'm thinking about it. I'm just, it's, yeah, I don't know. I'm just thinking about it from an X's and O's need perspective. And do we need, like, because to your point, like, an Alize Johnson and Nick Claxton, like, I feel like those are guys with whom a Thaddeus Young is blocking. Not to say that they're on, you know, Thaddeus Young's a wily vet. He's been doing this a while. I liked him when he was, you know, playing the Nets. I think I watched him last year and saw, like, oh, he's still doing the damn thing. But he, I don't know. I feel like on some level, like, loading up on yet more, you know, scrappy fours is like, like, that's what we have. We've got our scrappy
fours. Resign Jeff Green, resign Blake Griffin.
And then they're still blocking, like, Nick Claxton, Alize who's Johnson. Like closer to, I guess, closer to a five, but still in the scrappy four spectrum. And Alize Johnson, sure, and the Reggie Perry. All of these guys have a very similar mold and body type. I would like it if we could have more, as you say, pitches in our quiver to throw out there if we're designing.
I definitely
our,
don't say pitchers
pitches.
In my quiver.
Pitches in the quiver, as you, I feel like you have tattooed on your ribs.
Arrows pitcher. In the bag.
Arrows in the bag. But yeah, so not that I'm opposed to this from, like, in any way other than just, like, how does this fit into our rotation? Because I like Thaddeus Young, and I think that makes some sense if we're doing this kind of thing. And I think that getting rid of us, obviously, like, the DeAndre Jordan situation is maybe the most valuable part of this whole thing. But yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, there's another element that, like, so I like that he would go to the Bulls, and, like, I wouldn't be fearful of Spencer Dinwiddie, like, the ghost of Spencer Dinwiddie coming back to haunt the Nets in a real playoff series. I had another fun sign and trade that I came up with, and I really don't know if this actually works. Danny Green is on is going to be a free agent for Philly. Philly definitely needs a point guard, no matter what happens with Ben Simmons, if they keep him or if they don't. They need a true ball handler who can actually get into the paint and make things happen. Can the Nets do a double sign and trade with Philly where the Nets get Danny Green on a cheaper deal than what Dinwiddie's going to get paid. And they get like George Hill's expiring deal. George Hill's deal expires like the day free agency begins. So like you would decline the deal. Like, I don't know how the sign and trade mechanics work, but basically in my head, Sixers get Dinwiddie, Nets get Danny Green, who I like for the Nets, because it also like puts a little pressure on Joe Harris. Like, Joe needs a little pressure, I feel like. It needs to be pushed a little bit. And then you save money because you can decline George Hill's deal because it's a $10 million deal that you could just decline. But then again, like, do you trade with your rivals? Like, or is Sean Marks so confident that if I have all three of my big three healthy that, like, I don't really care? Do you know what I mean? Like, does he really care?
An interesting rival to trade with, just because I feel like they're in such an inflection point in Philly with what they're going to do with Ben Simmons, who seems like very much going to be traded this season, this offseason.
Maybe to the Nets.
Maybe to the Nets in a sign and trade for Spencer Dinwiddie. But yeah, so I actually think that's an
interesting... Is that the sign and trade?
Is that the...
do you sign and trade Dinwiddie, send him with DeAndre Jordan, and like a couple of that, like Shamit and Nick Claxton for Ben Simmons?
Surely somebody.
And then Ben Simmons is your small ball five.
Come on. Who says no?
What's the deal? Let's make the Ben Simmons to the Nets deal.
That's basically it. That's the structure.
Dinwiddie, DeAndre, Claxton, and Shamit for Ben Simmons. Right?
Claxton with a gun. That's my piece that I'm holding off.
Oh, okay. Claxton's holding you up.
But okay. He's not holding me up. It's not a deal breaker, but that's my loan negotiating piece. That's what I'm putting pressure on to get something else
then
useful back.
Then you put Joe Harris in the deal. You bring back Danny Green in a double sign and trade. You also sneak in like a future first from Philly as part of the deal. And then you sign JJ Redick.
Farkin Korkmaz.
I think he's untouchable. Fark. I think there's no way Cork's going to get out.
Farkin Korkmaz. What's his last name? Korkmaz? Am I saying it right?
Korkmaz. Yeah, Korkmaz. You're doing it right.
Yeah.
It's basically
saying the F word. You get it.
Honestly, though, Ben Simmons, the team that Ben Simmons needs to go to is the Nets.
I can see your brain whirling here around the potential. I feel like you finally locked in on what you really want to do. You're excited.
And then you just say to Ben, you're never touching the ball on offense.
Yeah.
Besides dunks. Like you're
which
not.
This is what he wants.
Yeah, well, it's weird though. He wants to control the ball and then not have it when it's about to be time to shoot.
Yeah.
Like he just doesn't want to shoot.
I don't
he
see
what likes
that's
the
such,
ball in his hands.
I don't see how that's such a bad thing. Like have him lead the break. When the break fails, great. Now you have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, James Harden to operate. Like perfect.
Yeah. I think we solved it. I think we figured out a way to get Ben Simmons on the Nets without really giving up anything that truly matters.
Great. And here's the thing. Ben Simmons needs to get traded to it. Like everyone else saw what we saw in the playoffs here. So like his value in terms of what you're getting back is not great right now. So getting back Spencer Dinwiddie and, you know, pick whatever it is like, I don't know what the market is for him, broadly speaking.
I'm surprised that there's not like Ben Simmons to the Knicks buzz.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thing about Ben Simmons, and people have talked about this, he's part of Clutch, LeBron James, Rich Paul sports agency. Mm-hmm. I don't know if LeBron's technically we're allowed to acknowledge that he like owns it. I think he's not allowed to own the sports agency, but it's like his agency. And so the idea is that like, if you're part of Clutch, you're not just then gonna, if you're a high value player, you're not just going to end up in Milwaukee. Mm. I don't know. Ben, like if you're the Knicks, you know, this, everyone brings this up, but like you, what do you give up?
Well,
RJ Barrett and like, I don't know, something. And then him and Randall together would just be clashing into each other.
That would be a disaster. Well, we figured it out. Do you want to end the show?
And I've got some more targets possibly. And I'll sprinkle them out throughout another show. But just to recap, the Nets are sign and trading Spencer Dinwiddie to the Sixers to bring back Ben Simmons in a crazy trade.
Yeah.
And the Nets are going to win the next four NBA championships.
Percent chance that we're the team that starts engaging for the Ben Simmons talk. I feel like it's of teams that can do this, I feel like we're weirdly in a good position. I know it sounds crazy to talk about, but
Well, okay, can I do a couple? Let's do a couple. This is the conspiracy theory part of this thing. Again, so Ben Simmons is part of Clutch, and Clutch would probably like to angle Ben Simmons in. I mean, they would probably love to have him on the Lakers or Clippers. Maybe not, I guess maybe not the Clippers, but like somewhere big. They would like Ben Simmons to continue to be like a really prominent star in the NBA. The minute that like Chris Haynes would tweet out, sources say a dark horse team has emerged in the Ben Simmons sweepstakes, and it's the Brooklyn Nets, people would lose their minds. Like, remember how angry people got when Blake Griffin, when it was rumored that he was going to be a Net?
Right.
It would be 10 times that.
Right.
He would fit on this team amazingly well.
Mm-hmm.
Because his lack of shooting wouldn't mean anything, because he would be screening, he'd be setting up in certain spots.
Oh, you know what? We just talked about this. It's Bruce Brown with handles who's actually big enough to play the position. That's
yes.
Yeah.
They basically send Ben Simmons Bruce Brown tape and say, this is what you're going to do.
Yeah.
But you're going to be better than Bruce Brown because you're Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
The trade could happen. It could work. Now, the question is, does Daryl Morey really want to send Ben Simmons to Brooklyn, right? Like you're basically giving up.
Yeah.
You're like, like I'm going to, unless if you really think Ben Simmons is so bad that he would sabotage what the Nets are doing.
Yeah.
The other factor, and this is completely, I understand that this is such a myopic view, such a small-minded American mindset of foreign relations.
We're just humans.
Sean Marks is from New Zealand and Ben Simmons is from Australia.
That's hilarious.
And I
big
understand
connection.
Completely that is actually like saying I am from America and someone's from Panama. Like the distance between the two countries, I'm sure, is massive. And there's no relation. But in my mind, New Zealand and Australia are
boys. They're
brother
boys.
And sister.
Yeah, those are boys.
And Sean Marks probably has known Ben Simmons or known about him for a long time, like anyone. And like, is there some soothsaying? Is that the phrase? Is there some sort of Marks Pacific, South Pacific Islander magic that he could impart?
Right, because here's what you want to do is you want to get Sean Marks to pour that Kiwi poison in his ear, right, so that he requests the trade specifically and then gives you more leverage. That's how you get the leverage.
There's more direct flights out of JFK to Sydney than there are from whatever terrible airport is in Philadelphia. I actually don't know that. What's the airport in Philadelphia?
I don't know. It's very prominent. I pass it every time. It's like really, it's on the way. It feels like it's on the way to everywhere when you're down there.
Anyway, so that's the deal. That's what we figured
out. Lock it in. This is becoming a two-parter. So there's going to be more emails and a whole lot more of what we actually think on the next episode, the next riveting episode of The Glue Guys. Mike, isn't that true? Do you agree with that?
Yeah. You can find us on HBO Max.
Yeah.
We are also streaming live on CNN. And thank you for listening.
Thanks, everybody. More soon. Bye.